Founders, welcome back to the Zero to 5,000 podcast, where we obsess over the convergence of human potential and business results. Today, our hosts Drew McClure and Jordan Mitchell have another insightful conversation for you. So let's jump right in.
All right, founders, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Judy Morgan. Dr. Judy Morgan has over 38 years experience as an integrative veterinarian, acupuncturist, chiropractor, food therapist, best-selling author, international speaker, podcast host, and owner of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets. Her goal is to change the lives of pets by educating and empowering pet parents worldwide in the use of natural healing therapies and minimizing the use of chemicals, vaccinations, and poor quality processed food. And today, to tell us all about her journey is Dr. Judy herself. So thank you for being here, my friend.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, take me back. How did we get into this? You've got a whole bunch of businesses you've started and things you've been doing for years now. Where did it all begin?
Well, it's really crazy. It actually started as a child. My sister always wanted a pony and I didn't. I wanted a hamster. But we ended up getting ponies when we were in junior high because my dad was moving us for a company job and my sister didn't want to go. And he broke down and said, "I'll get you a horse if you'll just stop complaining." And so when we moved from New Jersey to Virginia, he was true to his word and went out and bought a pony. We knew nothing. And so my mom, my sister and I, my mom had grown up on a farm and we went to the farm every day and the three of us were trying to ride this one little pony. And finally I said, okay, well then I guess we need a second pony. I'll take a pony instead of a hamster. Yay. And then when we moved back to New Jersey, we got involved in 4-H and I decided that I wanted to be a veterinarian. And that was my main focus from there on. I decided when I was about 12 years old. And so I worked for other doctors for about the first 10 years in practice, and I absolutely hated it. I hated my job. I hated what I was doing. I didn't want to go to work. I was sick half the time. And I actually lost my job for being pregnant. So we'll go back to 1989 when things were a little different for women. And so I was, you know, with a new baby and no job and wondering what the heck I was going to do for money. So I started being the substitute vet, which is, it's a tenum locum, but basically you go in when somebody's on vacation and you, so I was sort of basically self-employed at that point. And I was like, you know, this self-employment thing's pretty good. If I need to make more money, I work more hours. And if I want some time off, I just don't schedule myself to work. And from that, I ended up buying into a partnership in a satellite clinic from one of the clinics I was working in. Mm. And then I got started in all the alternative things, acupuncture and chiropractic and food and herbs and all these things. And my business partner at the time, he was like, "I don't understand that black magic voodoo that you're doing down in that practice, but you want to buy me out because I don't want to be part of it." And I said, "That's awesome." So I got to be my own boss, but I had to take out $1 million loan to do it.
Whoa.
And, you know, now it is very difficult for young veterinarians because most of them are not willing to take out $1 million loan. And you probably need a bigger loan than that now. They're scared to do it and they don't want to. And I can't blame them because I've been there, done that, put in the hours that it takes. So many things that I missed with, I had live-in nannies for my kids because that was the only way I could manage to do it. There were parts of being a practice owner that I adored and parts that I hated, like making payroll every week. Mm. And then because that wasn't enough fun, I opened a second clinic.
Perfect.
And I did it right at the time of the 2008 crash. So what happened in veterinary medicine is that everybody was living on their savings and their credit cards. And so people were still taking care of their pets. It was like, oh, they're part of the family. We're going to make sure they're taken care of. So things crashed in 2008. It hit us in August of 2010.
Interesting.
So it took that long for people to run out of money. And then because we used to say, you know, at 5 o'clock, the bus would pull up out front and just drop off all these sick animals because people came home from work and everything was a disaster, or they got hit by a car when they opened the door, whatever. And the bus stopped coming. And we were literally, OMG, what are we doing? And I was already invested in opening the new clinic. The new clinic opened 2 months later.
Wow.
So here I have now two clinics with nobody coming in the door.
Right. No cash flow.
No cash flow. So really, really scary stuff. And what I ended up doing was hiring consultants. Now, mind you, I hadn't taken a paycheck in about 2 months, and I was really struggling to make payroll. And these consultants called, business consultants called and said, we had reached out to you a year ago, and it was right before I had purchased out from my partner. And I had told them, call me back in a year. I don't want this business to grow now. I'm buying it. I don't want it to be worth more. So they did. They called me back. And I said, man, I'm dying here. And they said, okay, well, here's our program. It's $37,000. And I said, which part of I don't have any money did you not understand? And they said, well, here's our loan form you can fill out. And I'm like, you know, I started looking at it and I'm like, oh my God, this is like applying for a mortgage. Like, I hate paperwork and I hate all that stuff. So I said, I'm not doing that. I have a credit card that has a $37,000 limit. Here you go. And I bought it for myself as a birthday present.
Wow.
Because at that point I was going bankrupt.
Right.
And you know, I was
Hail Mary.
It was a Hail Mary. And I said, I'm either going down in flames or we going to turn this ship around. And the biggest problem I had with that is that I paid off the credit card within 2 months. That's how quickly they turned us around.
Really?
And what I discovered in the process is that my office manager had been embezzling.
Whoa.
So she freaked out when I said I was hiring consultants. And she's running around saying things like, they're going to go through the books. And if they find any money missing or if anything that's not quite right, who are they going to blame? They're going to blame me. And I'm like, why would you say that? And why would they blame you? Oh, poo.
Whoa.
So that was part of the problem. And just not, you know, I was trained in medicine. I was not trained in finances and how to run things. When I bought the clinic, I was like, oh, look at all this money coming in. I bought a sports car and I bought a new truck. And, you know, I was like, woohoo. I knew nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. So consultants are great. And then the next year, the biggest problem I had was 6 weeks before taxes were due, I went and met with my cousin, the accountant.
Of course.
I said, hey, I'm bringing you my stuff to get my taxes done for this year. And he said, okay. And he went through it and he said, oh, you owe $42,000. And I went, wait, what? Like, you know, I've gone for people's throats for things less than that. And so I went back to the clinic and I sat down all the staff and I said, I have a big problem. I mean, we kind of all have a big problem, but it's really my problem. But I need you to help me solve this problem. Mm. And we have 6 weeks to solve this problem. And let me tell you, one of the things that I firmly believe in is being very honest with the people that you work with and letting them know where things stand.
Mm.
And you know, bringing them in and having them invested in whatever your issue is, whether it's good or bad. Like, look at this. Let's all celebrate a win. Look at this. Poo, we got to figure this out.
Yeah.
So my staff was like, I said, look, and I was the only doctor at that time. And I said, you guys double book me, triple book me, quadruple book me. I will get them in. I will get them out. I will see them. Let's get this done. We got to make $42,000 on top of our normal. They all took it as the biggest, coolest challenge. We had one of those little thermometer things on the door. We were keeping track. And we did it.
Wow.
We absolutely did it. And so that was the story of the clinics. And then I got challenged to write a book in 2013.
Okay.
And so I took that challenge. And actually, what they said is you should – it was a Facebook group that I was in. People, you know, normal Facebook chatter, asking questions. What food do you feed? What medications do you use for this? How do you treat this? What do you do with this? And they were just talking amongst themselves as pet owners. And they realized that my answers were different from everybody else's. And they said, you should write this all down somewhere because every time a new person joins, you have to start over. And I said, oh, maybe I'll write a book. So I did. And then when the book, so I wrote it, and that was another throw $35,000 down the tubes because I didn't know how to get it published without paying a lot of money. I now know how to get a book published without paying a lot of money and how to make it a bestseller. So I said, okay, I've written this book, and it came out in 2014. And then it was how I just thought you write a book and people just buy it.
Right.
I didn't realize you actually have to market a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I had to go down the rabbit hole of how do I market the book? And I said, okay, I'm going to hire consultants to tell me how to do this and work with me. And I did. Bought myself another birthday present. I was like, I got to figure out how to do this. And I worked with Jack Canfield, the Chicken Soup for the Soul guy. Yeah. So he's one of my mentors. I've worked closely with him multiple times. He is amazing. And another company owned by Steve Harrison in Pennsylvania. And he does something called Quantum Leap and Publicity Summit, those sorts of things. So after I wrote the book, I had to figure out how to market it. And then I started this little side business called Naturally Healthy Pets, which because all these supplements and things that I talked about in my book, and then people started buying the book, it was like, well, why shouldn't they buy those supplements from me?
Yeah.
So my husband was a retired architect, and I said, hey, honey, how about starting this business in our garage? You know, and I'm going to work still working in two vet clinics. And I said, you know, besides doing everything else around the house, how would you feel about getting orders off the computer and packaging them up and taking them over to the post office and shipping them out? And he jumped right in and said, okay, cool, this will be fun. And at the time we thought, well, maybe this will be in retirement. It'll be, you know, a supplement to our income. And in 2020, right before January 2020, right before COVID started, my daughter had reached out to me in like November or December, and she was in North Carolina working for a startup. And she said, I'm tired of working for this startup. I want to do something different. What should I do? And I said, would you like to take over Naturally Healthy Pets and see if you can do something with it and get it out of my garage? And she said, that is so cool. And so at the time, I think she was like 26, and she's like, I'm a COO at 26. You know what? I'm like,
there we go.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. It counts.
Yeah. So we moved it to North Carolina, and she did things by herself until we moved to North Carolina in 21. So she had the business for a year before we came down, and she is still the COO. I am still the CEO. She has doubled the business every year since she took over.
Wow.
And she is amazing. And she's an engineer by trade.
Mm. All right. We've got a lot of points I want to go back to that I'm really fascinated by. So let's time travel back to 2010. And like you said, you got two practices now. You have people that are out of money from the 08 crash, and you have cash flow problems. You spend $37,000 on the credit card to join a consultant program or something like that.
Yep.
What actually did you learn or implement in that season that turned the business around so quickly?
Well, first of all, we got rid of dead weight. And I had never fired anybody. And so when I hired the consultants, I was like, you're going to fire these people, right? And they kept saying, don't worry, it'll take care of itself. And I'm like, no, I don't know how to fire people. I can't fire people. These are my friends. And they're like, don't worry, it'll take care of itself. And I didn't know how it was going to take care of itself. Well, the first one that went was the embezzling office manager, because that got found within the first week. And then I had to figure out who was going to be the new office manager. But what we did is we put systems in place, which, you know, we never had systems. We never had, like, this is how you have to do something. And nobody really had any responsibility. So we basically divided up responsibilities, and each team member had a statistic or two or three that they had to track.
Yep.
Every month. And they had to post their graphs, and then they had to cheerlead for each other to get their graphs up to what the goals were. So we finally were setting goals and tracking things. Well, about half the people said, I am not doing this. They were like, oh, this is going to be work. And what it did is it weeded out the people who were really just floating by. So my staff went from 13 to 8.
Whoa.
Including the other doctor left. So we went from 13 to 8. And so that cut my payroll by so much that took so much weight off. Then we got rid of the person who was embezzling. So we were getting that money staying in the practice.
How much were they taking out a month on estimate?
We don't really know. And we found like seven different ways that she was stealing. Like she was stealing products and food. She was said that she billed for things for her own animals, her family members, her friends, and then she would just mark them as paid, but they really weren't. She would skim money when she was taking money to the bank. Our employees had a system where they could purchase food and supplements for their own pets, and then all the money went into a book, and she was supposed to take it to the bank, but she took it home. Yeah, we only came up with about $33,000, but if we came up with that much, you know there's a lot more. And the court system found her guilty, and over 3 years, she paid me back $2,000, and then they gave her a clean record. The court system does not support the business owner.
Whoa.
That's I had insurance that gave me $15,000 back, thank God. So that helped us jumpstart moving forward. But just getting systems in place and getting rid of all the employees that really just were kind of hanging around and not doing what they needed to be doing.
Yeah.
So I ended up with a team of eight who was so fully invested in what we were doing, and then they were rejuvenated and excited, and they liked taking ownership of their statistics and what they were doing. So it just made a huge difference. And then it also, because we had systems, it wasn't like, oh, we forgot to talk about heartworm preventative or testing for that dog. And, oh, shoot, we only did that three times today, but we had 10 dogs come in. Oh, we forgot. So we put systems in place where you don't forget things. It's like, these are all the things you have to talk about when a pet parent comes in, and make sure that we're covering all the bases. And it actually made our medicine so much better because, you know, we were being consistent from one patient to the next instead of just, you know, kind of willy nilly. So it was just very eye opening, and it improved our practice so much. And then we learned how to advertise professionally and get more people in and ask for referrals. Just a lot of stuff that was put in place.
Super cool. So we didn't even get a chance to talk about this, but my job, in a sense, I own a business where I am, me and my business partner are executive coaches, business consultants, that type of thing. So I'm thinking through it from that lens, hearing what you're talking about. And what is remarkable, like you said, Gallup did a poll a while back, just looking at employee engagement and either the benefit or the cost at different levels of engagement to a business. And what they found is the most costly employee to have is the one that's doing just enough to not get fired.
Right.
The ones that are just under the radar. Like there's nothing spiking that would say they obviously got to go. There's no obvious buy-in that is really giving, you know, benefit to the business. Right. And it's because they stay so long and they produce so little that it's more of a drain on the business on the culture, because it kind of spreads.
On the culture, for sure, because, well, it spreads, but then those who really are the good employees, it's performance punishment. They end up doing twice as much, and then they get burned out or mad, and then you get all that infighting. And so when we kind of cleaned up our act and got everything the way it needed to be going and had everybody really invested in our culture, we were so much more productive, but the team, it was all camaraderie and everybody got along, and you know, you didn't hear that me, he said, she said. It disappeared because we were all working for a common cause, and it's crucial to a business in order for it to work. And that's what we see in Naturally Healthy Pets in our business now, which has grown quite a bit from my husband in the garage.
Yeah. Well, what's cool, the thing that you did really well, and maybe they coached you into this, or maybe you just saw it clearly, is when we come in a similar situation and all of a sudden we've got a real system for tracking things, and we've got real goals and real accountability, like systems that produce accountability, you will see the section of people that do not like that, and they're complaining. But if you're the business owner whose mindset is, whatever I do is supposed to keep everyone I have right now happy, you think it's not working. You're like, no, the new things we're doing aren't working. Like people are arguing and I'm getting all these emails from my employees saying they don't like what's going on, versus recognizing, no, we might have highlighted the people that just don't fit here.
Exactly.
And if we let them move on, then what we have is a bunch of people that do fit here, and that synergy is so tremendous to the energy of the business, as well as the business owner going, I got a team of people that like being here that are on board and are helping me move this thing forward, right?
Yep.
But it sucks. Absolutely. No one likes the idea of firing somebody or of losing someone. And the insecure part of us goes, did I do something wrong? Was it me? Should I have created something better? Instead of going like, no, they just might not have been the right person at the right time for this place, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. Okay, so then you go and write a book, and you made a claim that I would love to hear more about the learnings, because you've gone on a journey of, and it's not wasted money, but I spent more money than I had to, and then I had a gap of not knowing how to actually put it out in the world, get it in front of people. What if someone's out there that's writing a book and you could give the TED Talk to them? Talk us through what you learned to actually to do that well.
So the first book, when I wrote it, you know, there's self-publishing, and then you can get a publisher. Well, to get a publisher, you've got to have an agent, you've got to write a book proposal, and that will add at least another year to getting your book in people's hands.
Yeah.
And having your book, people think that having your book published by a publishing house is going to give it more credibility. Well, my books get tons of credibility, and they're self-published. There is nothing wrong with self-publishing, and you can get a ton of credibility even doing it that way. And so the first one cost me so much money because I went with a hybrid publisher, which basically you're self-publishing, but then through them, you can hire an editor. They'll help you with formatting. They help you with your cover design. Well, my husband's an artist, so the cover design was no big deal.
Yeah.
And what I did is I went on social media and I said, to my groups, and I said, I need 5 people who want to be editors on my book. And I'll give you a signed copy of the book when I'm done. And I had 5 people who truly were editors. That's what they did for a business. And they all said, I would love to do it for free.
Whoa.
Except, silly me, I wasn't sure that was good enough. So I paid the hybrid publishing company another $2,500 to edit it. They changed like 2 words. I was like, well, that was wasted money. You know, these people that did it for free did a really good job, and I should, you know, thank them heavily for that. And then I did a contest to name the book. So that person got a signed copy of the book when it came out as well. But I paid a lot of money to the hybrid publisher. And now, because that first book is with the hybrid publisher, the book sells for $18 and I get $1.72 per book. So when you go with a publisher, you make very little per book. When you self-publish, so now when I self-publish, I don't want to learn how to upload everything to KDP, which is the Kindle Direct platform for Amazon. I don't want to have to learn how to upload things to Ingram Sparks. So I hire somebody and I pay them $1,500. And they do all of that work for me. So all I have to do is write the book, and then I pay somebody $1,500. They format it. They get it on the platforms. Mm. I update my author page. And so I can pop a book out for $1,500, and my royalties on, let's see, I have a $24 book out right now. The royalties on that one are $18. And I have another one where my royalties are like $12 to $15. So when you're making $18 a book versus $1.72 a book, you don't have to sell near as many books. And now, because my platform has grown and we have an email list over 100,000, we have, oh gosh, over 350,000 on social media that follow us. So it makes it a lot easier. Once you build a following, it's really easy to get your books sold. Mm. And the other mistake I made with the first book is I was trying to sell it individually to people, because I was like, well, shoot, I'm going to make $1.72 if it sells on Amazon. But if I sell it myself, I'm making like $11. Well, that was very short-sighted, because you need Amazon reviews.
Hmm.
You need reviews. So when you launch it, you want to launch on Amazon, and you want to get all of your followers and all of your people, and you tell them, this is the day I need you to buy. And you get everybody to buy on the same day.
Yep.
And that drives your rankings up. And then you say, and I also, as soon as you get the book, look through the book, read the book, please go back on there and post a review. So you get your reviews very quickly, you get your sales up and you're ranking up very quickly. But one of my books that I wrote in 2017, I've been following it. And the other thing is picking the right categories for your book. So you don't want to just be a dog book. Like you've got to narrow it down so that you can find, like my sister wrote a book and one of her categories was rabbits. I think it was rabbits and rabbit training. Well, there are not a lot of books on rabbits and rabbit training. So her book is a number one Amazon bestseller. She's probably sold 10 copies. maybe a little more. I don't really know. Yeah. But the ranking is very low. But when it first came out, it got a number one ranking. And then you always are available. You have the availability to put a sticker on your book that says number one Amazon bestseller.
Mm.
And then I enter my books. Now I enter my books in other contests so that I get all kinds of Reader's Choice Awards and, you know, Indie Awards and all kinds of things. I just enter them in different categories and in different contests. And then you get all these awards and stickers and things to say, well, it's a number one bestseller and it's got 5-star reviews and blah, blah, blah.
Wow. I love that. How did you built an extensive email list and a social media following? What's been some of the keys to doing that?
So my social media, I started on Facebook because it's my age demographic. And I started that in 2016.
Okay.
Because I was trying to market the book and then started the Naturally Healthy Pets. Well, we can talk about how I got started on Amazon and the pitfall there as well. This is good as the embezzling office manager.
Great.
But through Steve Harrison and the book marketing group, they said, hey, this new thing came out, Facebook Live. Have you ever tried it? And I said, no. And so we did a short run in their office and, you know, I turned on my page and Facebook Live, hi, I'm in, you know, so-and-so's office. I'm just seeing if this works. And people were like, oh, this is so cool. So my husband and I started Breakfast with Spaniels. Our dogs are all Cavalier King Charles Spaniels and English Toy Spaniels. And at the time we had 10. And so we started Breakfast with Spaniels. Every morning I would sit at our kitchen table with the 10 dogs lined up on the bench next to me. And my husband would hold the phone and I would just talk about veterinary medicine and problems with their dogs and how to feed them and natural health and whatever. They knew everything that was going on in my family. It was just bare bones. Like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
We did that every single day, no matter what part of the world we were in, for 7 years.
Wow. That's a lot.
And if I was not available, my husband would do it. We had a friend write music. We have our own branded music for Breakfast with Spaniels. And we had fun with it and people loved it. So we still do a lot of live video content across a lot of platforms now. And it's, you know, each platform has their own, like, this is what, yeah, and I don't know anything about any of that. That's why we now have a team.
I
don't do Breakfast with Spaniels anymore.
I was going to say, you have to have some kind of team keeping this all organized and straight. So many
Well, it was really easy at the beginning. It was my husband and I in our kitchen and in our garage. And we were like, oh, well, we can do this.
Wow. And then how did you convert into a email list?
So that really, you know, another, like, I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
I wasn't working on building an email list. You know, things like, would you like more information on this? Put in your email and we'll send you something. I didn't know how to do that. So when my daughter took over, she was like, your email list is really puny. We really need to do something about this. And so she has done all kinds of, and again, we have a team now. So we have a graphics person and we have video people and we have people who do reels and shorts and longs and this and that. But we have a lot of free downloads, which is really what you need. You need free downloads with information that people want and they have to put in their email address in order to get that free download. And then they're on your email list.
Yeah.
So it's, and she grew it pretty quickly. And every time we have like a huge topic, and now we do focus weeks on our social media. So 1 week out of every month, we might focus on cancer, or we might focus on urinary tract disease or respiratory disease or heart disease or dental disease. And we have a whole week of expert interviews, other people that we bring on, and we produce a lot of content, blogs and videos, and a lot of free downloads And that helps build the email list. But it's good information that people want. And frankly, once people find us, they're like, why didn't I know all of this?
Right.
And so that's another thing that that people need to know is it's give, and then ask. So we have tons and tons and tons of free content. So for people who say, I don't have the money to buy this or to spend on that, it's like, fine, just take our free content. There's tons of it, tons of it.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll talk to somebody else who can buy something or does, you know, need a consultation or something bigger from us. So that was one of the things that I learned from Jack Canfield.
Yeah.
give, and then ask. And then, you know, once you start asking, don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid to ask for help. And then we hired a consultant through the Jack Canfield Group for a year. And he really helped us with our email marketing campaigns. And email marketing has now become a huge part of what we do. And then about a year and a half ago, we started offering online courses. And the courses are great because once you make them, they're evergreen. And then we have other people, other veterinarians, other experts who have courses that they've put on our platform. So we make something off of their courses, but we have a big platform to get their courses out there. So just
super
chipping
cool.
away.
Super cool. What it makes me think of is, you know, Kevin Hart is a comedian that from outside felt like came out of nowhere. It felt like one of those overnight successes, right? It's like, how is he already doing stadiums? Like, where'd this guy come from? And I heard another comedian talking about that. And he said, what you don't understand is for 10 years, I saw Kevin in the local comedy clubs. Mm-hmm. And what he was doing that was different than everybody else in those local comedy clubs was he had a team that was going through the audience after he performed and giving them an ability to sign up for his newsletter.
Ah.
And so every time he would kill, you know, like he's delivering the value of like, man, he just did awesome at this local comedy club. His team would pass literally like a notepad around. Hey, do you want to stay up to date on what Kevin's doing? He's got an email list. He'll let you know when he's going to be in town next. And he did that for 10 years so that by the time he was really, you know, crushing, he had a huge email list that said, hey, we're coming to your city. I'm going to be performing at this place. And he would sell out because all those people had been keeping up with him. Knew about him coming into town.
Yep.
And I'm like, that is so smart. Like, you actually thought ahead of time of, I need to build an email list, basically. I need to be able to keep in touch with people that like what I'm doing, right?
Yeah. Yep. And we did that a little bit, like when I still had the clinics and we were still in New Jersey in the garage, we did about 40 events a year. So whether it was a pet expo or a dog walk in the park or whatever, and we would have a table and we would be advertising the veterinary clinics as much as anything else, getting clients and getting some email lists. You know, we'd have a pad of paper, you know, sign up for our newsletters, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that was for us, it was a very slow way to get a few at a time versus now we've got it rolling. It's kind of one of those, you hit a tipping point and once it gets going, it starts to roll downhill a lot faster.
Absolutely. So when did it take off to the degree where you decided I need a team to help me with this? It's not just me and my husband anymore holding the camera.
Well, so my daughter took it over and moved it to North Carolina, but that was COVID year. So literally she had her baby and she and her baby were in the warehouse for a year and didn't see anybody else. And they were the only ones while her husband was there. So they, you know, that was it. And my husband and I were still in New Jersey getting things closed out. And about a year in, she said, I need some help. Because we would come down for Cyber Week, you know, Black Friday, Giving Tuesday, whatever, Small Business Saturday. So we would come down for that week to help pack because that's when we always have a sale and we have, you know, tons of orders. And then after that, she was like, we're going to need some help. I'm going to hire somebody. So she hired somebody just to help fulfill orders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Well, after 2 years in our 1,200 square foot warehouse in Raleigh, we were bursting at the seams because I would find new products or new lines that I wanted to carry and we just didn't have room. So we went looking for a new warehouse and the only thing we could find was 7,100 square feet. So we went from 1,200 to 7,100 and I said, I can't even afford this. And this is like a roller skating rink in here. What the heck are we going to do with all this space? And so my husband and I and my daughter, we stood here and we said, guess we'll have to grow into it. And it was the only space available. So we said, okay. And I said, I don't even know how, again, I don't even know how I'm paying this rent. But at the time, none of us were really taking salaries. I mean, my daughter was because she needed to live. But my husband and I had been playing with this for a few years and we hadn't taken any money out of it. And I was like, well, you know, if this is going to be a little retirement supplement, sooner or later, I'm going to need a salary. And I've always been the lowest paid person in the company, except for my husband. So, and that's fine. So here we are 2 years later in our 7,100 square feet, and we are bursting at the seams again.
Wow.
Again. And so we went to our landlord and they said, well, you can buy the entire complex, which is four units. And I said, yeah, I don't know if I want to do it. It's like 33,000 square feet. I said, I don't think I want to do that. And then they had another unit that's a little bigger, but it needs like $200,000 worth of work put into it. And I said, I'm not putting $200,000 into the building that you own, and I don't want to buy the building. So we've extended our lease because we can't find anything else in the area. And we are very creative with where we're, how we're storing things and what we're doing. But our team, so it started with that one fulfillment person. We moved to the bigger warehouse. That fulfillment person didn't want to move over to the new warehouse. So we hired somebody else and then it got too much for him. So we said, do you have any friends? And hired one of his friends. And then 6 months later, do you have another friend? So that's how the warehouse team has, the fulfillment team has grown. They're amazing. It's four young college guys and, they all want to stay and grow into bigger roles, which is amazing. You know, one of them was majoring in business at college. And I said, well, instead of going away to school, you've already got 2 years under your belt. Can you stay here and go to classes from here and stay on full time? And you know, just work your way up through the company. I mean, where else are you going to learn more about a business than here?
Right.
And he's like, absolutely. So, you know, they all said great. And then one of the people that my daughter hired to be a fulfillment person, she's like an amazing graphics person. So as soon as we got another fulfillment person, we're like, Emily, you're out of there. You are over on the other side of the wall. You are now doing graphics and advertising. And I had done a consultation for a pet owner in Florida. He was a pastor at the time. And he said, you know, I do video editing on the side. I'd be happy to get things going on YouTube because we were kind of ignoring it at the time. He said, I'll take your Facebook videos. I'll edit them. I'll put them on YouTube for you. And I said, oh, what's that going to cost me? Because at the time, you know, still kind of broke. And so we came up with a per video fee. And then after, I don't know, maybe a year, we said, we kind of need somebody like full time, like up here in North Carolina. Would you move? And couldn't figure out how, again, didn't have a lot of money for salaries at the time. So I bought a house because he couldn't afford to get a house to live in here. So I was like, okay, I'll buy a house. The company will pay rent as part of your salary. It's,
wow.
It's finding ways to make it work. It's like, yeah. I needed a video person. We knew he would do a good job because he'd already been doing it remotely. And so then we could set up a studio here. And then it got to be too much work for him with all the courses that we're making and all this other stuff. And so we said, well, who do you know? And so he brought us someone from his church and said, she does video work for our church. So this is how we hire. It's like, who do you know?
I like that.
And that it has worked out beautifully for us because let me tell you, every time we put out an ad for somebody, we get nothing, nothing. And so, you know, when you get a personal referral from somebody who works for you, they're not going to recommend somebody who's not going to do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. They got their own kind of skin in the game for having made the recommendation and better be the right person, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
So okay. I told you I wanted to tell you my Amazon story. So when we first started and we were going to start selling product, I was like, and I had my own private label products, a product from New Zealand that's another long story. But so I was like, well, if we could get these products on Amazon, then we have a much bigger audience and we'll be able to sell more, even though Amazon takes a cut, but we'll be able to sell more. So I had to learn how to do that. And of course, what comes in the mail, like something from this group called FBA, Fulfillment by Adam, but they're using the FBA, which is Amazon's thing. And so we went to the intro and it's like, oh, they're going to teach us how to get our products on there, how to get good rankings, how to sell more, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Their top tier program was $30,000. Once again, Judy says, jump in with both feet, spend $30,000, birthday present to myself. I need to stop having birthdays.
You have expensive birthdays.
So I said, okay, we're going to learn how to do this. And my husband was all in. And so we went with this group to Breckenridge and we went to Bermuda because they always had their meetings and trainings in fun places so you could write it off. Well, come to find out, they were a scam.
No.
And we were in like $75,000 with these guys. Now, my husband set up an Amazon store and I set up my Amazon store. And we did actually learn a lot. They did know how to sell on Amazon and we actually did learn a lot. But once we figured out they were a scam, I called up my lawyer and I said, I need to get some money back from this scam. We had learned enough that, you know, even if we lost the 75, it's like, okay, it was an investment. We learned something. It was training, consulting, call it whatever you want. So my lawyer sent a letter to the state attorney general. They were in Massachusetts and we were in Jersey. And he sent it to both state attorney generals and said, this is a scam. This is what's going on. We're suing for $25,000. And I got my money in 3 days.
Whoa.
And I was the only person, like they bilked people out of tens of millions of dollars. And I was the only one when you read that, because Amazon eventually went after them. And when you read the lawsuit with where the FTC came in, there's a little footnote with my name in there. It says I was the only person who managed to sue them and get any money back.
What essentially was the scam? Like,
so the scam was they would buy, like, so Amazon dumps tons of stuff. Actually, a lot of stores dump a ton of stuff if you watch the dumpster diving videos. And so they would get these truckloads of stuff that didn't sell at Amazon or, you know, the stores went broke or whatever. And they had these big warehouses. And then they would sell us, the people who were buying from them, they would sell us these products. And they would tell us, oh, the margin on this is like 300%. And, you know, oh, the ranking on this is really high. And they would give us all these scam numbers. And then so we would buy product from them, put it in my husband's Amazon store, because we kept mine very clean with just the veterinary products. And so we'd put them in his store and then they'd languish. It is like, oh my gosh, we just bought $15,000 worth of stuff. And now it's just sitting here. We can't sell this. We can't give it away. And half the time we would buy things from them and they'd never arrive. So we'd call them out on it and say the product never arrived. And so, oh, well, we'll send you, you know, after a lot of screaming and yelling, I was really good at screaming into my phone. I think they finally decided I was just like such a crazy person that they couldn't deal with me. So they would just send us more stuff just to get me to stop yelling at them.
So they're taking stuff that doesn't sell, convincing you it will sell, having you buy it from them. So they've made their money on that inventory. And yep. Meanwhile, it's just sitting uselessly in your Amazon store.
Or it never even arrives at your Amazon store. And they were bilking people out of, you know, $30,000 a pop to take their course. And this went on for a good couple of years that they were doing it. And then the FTC came in and Amazon jumped on them. And I don't know where they are now. I'm pretty sure, I know they had a lot of money hidden offshore, so they're probably not in this country.
Dang. Man, I just always get so disheartened when there's bad actors, you know, around, when people are trying their hardest to make a real living and provide real value in the world. And then you get people out there just taking advantage of it. It's so discouraging.
So, you know, my take on my entrepreneurship is if it can go wrong, it's probably going to, but it's how you deal with that. So, you know, I had to spend $37,000 on a consultant. I had an embezzling office manager. I spent $35,000 to publish a book. And that book hasn't made me back that $35,000, but it was a calling card that got me into a lot of speaking engagements and, you know, made me more well-known and made it easier to write the next books. you know, and then $75,000 on an Amazon thing. I mean, it's just like, okay. But it's, I don't know, for me, adversity almost makes me figure things out faster because there is no option to fail.
Yeah, we call it forced ingenuity. That's what.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
That's how we, when COVID hit, we, not surprisingly, were very much affected by it in our business, right? Because we are those consultants that are being paid by these businesses, and then they're not sure what is happening, and so they freeze all outside spending, all that kind of stuff. So we had a huge hit in 2020. But what we told the team was, this is a moment of forced ingenuity. Like, we could have waited around years to maybe come up with some of the solutions that we were forced to come up with very quickly. But I'm curious, for you, you have such a, in your story all throughout is amazing kind of creative problem solving, or back up against the wall, but you leaned in instead of running away, and you found a way, you got your money back, all those types of things. Is that, in your mind, something just kind of how you've naturally always been, or were they decision points to think about it differently or to kind of train that skill in yourself?
Yeah, that's not who I am. It's when your back's against a wall, you just have to figure it out. I am actually very shy by nature. I'm great on camera. I'm great on stage. But take me to a cocktail party where I don't know anybody, I am not going to talk to anybody. My husband, thankfully, is outgoing, so he helps. But I'm shy, and my nature is actually kind of fearful, and I would love to run away when there's a problem. But too many people have counted on me. In my veterinary clinics, I had employees that counted on me. We couldn't go broke. In our business now, I have employees and families that count on us. And, you know, the people that we serve in the community, the pet owners, the pet parents, we have a responsibility to them now. So there is no failure. It's, and I guess I've gotten stronger because I've had to go through so many of these things. And I just keep saying, I have to say it's God, but God throwing things in front of me and saying, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to back away? Are you going to go around it? Are you going to step into this and run with it? And, you know, I just keep taking leaps of faith.
I love that. You probably are familiar with this, but I used to read my kids the bear hunting story. What was it called? Going on a Bear Hunt. And it's got whole thing. They're going on a bear hunt, and you're like, it's kind of a song you sing to them, right? And they keep getting to these obstacles. They get to a river, they get to whatever, and the refrain is, can't go over it, can't go under it, can't go around it, gotta go through it. And I was reading that every night while I was in the middle of my entrepreneurial journey, and it kept hitting me. I'd be in a moment where I'm like, I just want to run, or I want to figure out a way around this, or I want this to go away. And it kept coming to my mind, you can't go over this, can't go around this, can't go under this, you just gotta go through it. And
I like that a lot. And I do remember that song literally from childhood. So maybe that's because that's what I keep saying, like, you know, it's thrown in front of me and I can't, these are my choices. So I love that.
And if there were a door, I'd take it. But that door represents a different kind of pain, letting people down. Or like you said, like, yeah, I could technically take that, but there's some character thing in me, or integrity, or loyalty to people that says not taking that option. You know, and that's where the greatest breakthroughs happen and the greatest lessons are learned, are the ones that you wish you could avoid, you just couldn't. Right. That's the hard part about being a business owner. You invite those situations into your life to a degree that you've not invited if you took a different path. Right. You're not exempt in life. Life will always throw you that stuff. But when you're an entrepreneur or a business owner, you've invited that at a much higher rate into your own life, right?
Yep.
I was telling a client the other day who was feeling guilty about controlling their own schedule, and some of the perks of being an owner is that you get to decide when you do things and how you do things, and they were feeling guilty about it. And I said, well, have you thought about it this way? If you're going to take all the burden of being a business owner, why aren't you taking advantage of the blessing?
Exactly.
Like, there's a whole burden you take on by being the business owner. You've got the pressure. You've got the bills to pay. You've got the decisions having to be made. You've got the angry emails coming your way, whatever it is, right? If you're going to take that burden on, you might as well counterbalance it with the blessing. Well, at least I get to dictate my own schedule, or at least I get to have this flexibility that I really enjoy. And I'm like, so don't take away the good part that comes with the risk you took and the pressure and the gray hairs you invited into your life, right?
Yeah,
and once we said that, right. And once I said that, they're like, I've never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah. If I'm going to take this burden on, I'm also going to take the blessing on with it and not feel guilty about it.
Absolutely. You know, if you're the one taking out the millions of dollars in loans, you got a big burden. So you might as well take the good stuff.
Yeah. I remember having a friend tell me one time, was like, can you just not justify everything? Like, if you went on a trip, you don't have to say that you've, well, we found a discount airline. And it's like, just say thank you. It was a great trip.
Yeah.
You don't need to justify any more than that. Like, yeah, it was great. They don't need to know that you worked really hard and you saved and, you know, put it on a credit card and blah, 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 whatever it is, you know? Right. I have one friend who's like, every time they take a trip, like, you just don't understand. My wife has so figured out, and it's true, has figured out how to take advantage of like the credit card points. And so we got that trip for free. And I'm like, that's awesome. I don't need to know that though. I was just happy that you went on a great trip, but
exactly.
we all have this feeling of like, everyone's judging me or how does this look? And it's just a waste of energy.
It is. You're true. You're right. You're right.
So with this current business, you've got the benefit and the blessing of your daughter working with you and for you.
Yes.
What's that like, bringing family even further into the mix with this? Luckily, it sounds like she's sharp and smart and it's working out well.
Oh my gosh, she's so smart.
but how's that been overall?
I can only remember one bad, really bad day where she was like, I'm getting my resume together. I'm sending it out tomorrow. I don't even remember what we were fighting about at the time, but it was just, it was kind of, actually, I do remember. It was about babysitting an employee who wasn't doing their job and she was going away and she put me in charge of babysitting the employee. And I was like, why are we babysitting this employee?
Right.
The employee didn't last long, so it was fine. But, you know, the thing is, I'm pretty hands-off at this point. Like, I let her make all decisions. I used to be the one in charge of when and where I would do video content and that sort of thing. And I jokingly now say I'm just the talking head. Like, they tell me when to show up, where to show up, what I'm talking about, and I'm happy to do it. I went through a little bit of a ego crisis when I had to let that go. And I sat here in the office one day and cried and said, I'm not in charge anymore. And now I kind of embrace that. And I'm like, do I have to come to work this week? Could I do something else? So we actually get along really well. And the thing is, she knows the business is going to be hers because I'm not going to do this till I'm 103.
Right.
And she's just very invested in it and she's very smart. And her, like, I think that my integrity and my truthfulness is impeccable. And she puts me to shame. I mean, she's like, if there's any question about a product or something we said or, you know, something that came in that somebody complained about, like, she doesn't blow it off. She investigates, she fixes it. And, she, you know, because sometimes I'm like, oh God, is that going to blow up? Is that going to be a big deal? And she's like, who cares? We have to do the right thing. It doesn't matter. We have to do the right thing. And that is like, we have cut off a lot of companies where their integrity is not in line with what we think it needs to be. And we're like, well, then we're not going to work with you. We're not going to carry your products. We are not going to promote your products. And the thing is, I like to think of us as sort of the consumer reports for pets. You cannot pay me to promote your product. If I like your product, it's probably going to end up in my warehouse being sold. And we're going to promote it on our own because we like it. And we want to sell the product because we want people to have it. So you can't buy my love.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Which engenders trust to your customers that you're not just being, you know, paid on behind the scenes to push some product that's not any good for their pet or whatever, right? What's the number one? We'll leave with this. What's the number one or two, if more than one comes to mind, but the number one lesson you think you've learned as a business owner that you'd love to be able to to pass on to other business owners, maybe earlier in their career?
Oh man, you know what? It is going to take a lot of work. And at the beginning, put in the time, put in that, and find your passion, because if you're not passionate about what you're doing, it's never going to stick. So if you're like, oh, I got this job. Okay. You know, blah, blah. I decided I'm going to open a tire store. I hate tires. I hate cars, but I'm going to open a tire store because I hear there's good money. You're not going to make money because you're not passionate about it. So you need to find your passion. I mean, I can't stand to see animals or people suffer. And if I can find a way to help end any pain and or suffering that an owner is experiencing because of something with their pet or that the pet is experiencing, I'm going to do everything I can to help them and to change the outcome.
Yeah.
And so, and then again, you know, having that integrity and the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated, and you'll never have a problem. And as long as you always tell the truth, you don't have to remember what lie you told. So it makes life pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, I'm old enough now. I'm 38, I think, about to be 39, where you find out so-and-so was cheating on so-and-so, and this came out in the news and whatever. And the other day, my wife needed my phone, and I just gave it to her. And then my kids need my phone, and I just gave it to them. And I was like, I'm glad I have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because everybody just saw it.
Well, it's just like that feeling of like, yeah, take my phone. Versus like, if you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, that's where you're like, hold on real quick. Let me, or you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, yeah. What are you looking at over there?
I'll look it up for
you. Yeah, I'll look it up for you. Versus just the freedom in business and life and whatever. Like, no one is perfect, but we can be honest and we can be as integral as possible, right? Yep. To where that you're not worried if someone like, you know, your business manager or whoever she was, like got real nervous when people started looking at the books versus being able to say like, sure, bring in the consultants. Let's look at the books. Like that peace of mind is invaluable.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing like it. And I also think it's a success strategy. It's not just peace of mind.
Absolutely.
I think if you're in this game for the long haul, that is a success strategy. You earn trust. You become reliable. You are surviving, not having lawsuits, you know, that can take you down, right? So Dr. Judy, this has been so fun. I'm glad that we got to talk business with you, because I'm sure most of the time you are talking specifically about, you know, pet health or all that kind of stuff. But I've learned a whole bunch from you, everything from how to think about writing a book and promoting it and doing that, as well as to take scary, struggling situations and turn them around. So I know I've learned a lot. I bet my audience has as well. And I just want to thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Founders, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and hop into our monthly founder email so we can ensure you stay on the edge of peak performance and massive business results.